Last night, I asked Tony, how do you want me to introduce you? And he said, what do you mean? I said, well, if you leave it to me, I might say something, and I might regret it. So he said, I'll leave it to your discretion then. So, at which point, Ruth popped up and says, you can say, here is Dr. Morris, Ruth's husband. So, I would like to introduce to you today, Dr. Morris, Ruth's husband.
What I will present to you today is one of the difficulties you have to overcome before you get to the promised land just described to you by Chris. Now, recently there have been there's been a renewed interest in adverse reactions. And this renewed interest has been principally based upon two events. One was the swine flu episode that was mentioned by Archie yesterday, where an unexpected number of Guillain-Barré cases followed the injection of swine influenza vaccine. The other was the occurrence in the early 1980s of an unexpected large number of adverse events that followed the injection of pertussis vaccine. Now, this resulted in an interest in the Congress because vaccine manufacturers said they would no longer produce vaccine unless the risks could be measured. And this resulted, the first slide, please. Now, remember, the vaccines have been used now for at least 50 years on a wide usage throughout the world. Now, from 1979 to 1990, there were two ways in which adverse events were reported. The physician who administered the vaccine was to voluntarily submit to the government the occurrence of adverse events. This was voluntarily done. He was under no pressure to do this. First of all, he was to determine whether or not the event was a serious event, or whether or not it was not a serious event, in which case no report was made. They would be made to the Centers for Disease Control and the Food and Drug Administration. In 1990, with the passage of a compensation law, the Congress said we must have accurate information, and that resulted in the establishment of a vaccine adverse event reporting system, which combined these two systems, which was to receive all reports of adverse events after the administration of the vaccine, including all those on the vaccine injury table that I'll talk about later. The next slide, please. Now, there were strengths and weaknesses in this new adverse reporting system. First, it could strengths. It could serve as a sentinel for unrecognized events, provided information on the frequency of these adverse events, provide specific information as to the type of vaccine, and generates hypotheses for the reasons why these events occurred. Now, what were the weaknesses of this system? It was non-representative of all cases, but the most important weakness was the data would be inadequate to assess causality. This system was specifically designed so that question cannot be answered. Next slide, please. Now, the short-term
by the old system. We're addressed by the new system. We have one system instead of two, one form instead of two forms, annual mail-out to MDs, vaccine injury table mandated reporting, toll-free number for inquiries, direct consumer reporting, confirmation letter. Vaccine injury table mandated reporting. We'll get back to that in a minute. The next slide, please. Now, there are problems and there are the solutions. The inability to address the causality by vaccine, misrepresentation, misinterpretation of the data by the public, because when the raw data were released to the public inadvertently, when they were shown there were many deaths, 700 and some deaths, within a relatively short period of time, administration of vaccines, this was supposedly misinterpreted by the public, and it was wrong by the public. And there were different needs. There was competition between the three agencies for how this information should be used. To solve these problems, this inadequate response to the Congress to give reliable information, these were supposedly solved by the development of a large new database system. It closed another explanation sheet, monthly conference call activities. Now all this is gobbledygook, a collection of garbage, which would be absolutely meaningless. But it costs lots of money, lots of time to accumulate this information. The next slide, please. Now, the planned improvements in the data collection was to increase the public awareness. Remember that now. One of the planned improvements was to increase public awareness. Yearly mail out, participants in medical meetings, public facilities, telephone recording system, telefax recording system, improved follow-up activities, integrate with the Division of Accident Injury Compensation, identify claims not reported to payers. Now go back to the planned improvements, increase public awareness. Now all of this is done in the political sphere in response to a political question. How do we get through reliable information on adverse events that follow the injection of vaccines? Next slide, please. Now, planned improvements, data management, improve coding of reported events, maintain and improve duplicate reports, implement systematic evaluation and quality assurance, improve CRA. Improve CRA. Now, remember that I emphasized the fact that the public was supposed to be informed of these events, but planned improvements. Improve the security of the information. Next slide, please. Plan improvements. Online access to the internet. Everybody assesses the same business data. Security. Multi-level access. Password protected. Logon codes. Data encryption. This is the black box. I was mentioned yesterday, put in information to a black box. You put information into a black box, is what I described what I had to do yesterday. You put this information in this black box, and this is what comes out. I'm telling you what's inside of that black box. What goes on inside of that black box. Now, the CDC, the FDA, and the compensation system, we have to edit this information, this electronic display of the data system, the state public health departments that get it, the public access only information releasable by Freedom of Information Act, which means that it must be available to the public. Because to get the information from the government through the information, that Freedom of Information Act, most of it's blacked out. It's blacked out, and they give for this two reasons. One, that it's proprietary information, that it can only be released by those who provide the information. And two, the patient-doctor relationship. That all of this is private. None of this information can be released to the public unless a specific request is made through the Freedom of Information Act. Next slide, please. Now, there will be a comprehensive analysis of adverse medical effects of vaccination. There's a vaccine safety bill of the National Innovation Program's large database. Next slide. Now, the objectives of the study is to evaluate associations between vaccination and adverse events. Now, see, this is a bit of a jargon. We're going to evaluate associations, not causality, but associations, which could be temporal rather than causal. We will confirm or refute current associations. We'll identify predisposing characteristics or conditions that might contraindicate vaccination. Detect previously unknown associations and evaluate national past surveillance systems to determine the reporting system efficiency and assess biases and other operating characteristics. Next slide, please. Now, this study involves 500,000 children between these ages. They will be ethnically diverse, represented in three states, California, Oregon, and Washington. The data collection began in 1991 and was ongoing in 1992. There will be planned expansions in adolescents and adults and the Indian Health Service. Now, it's remember that Indian Health Service as a population in which this information is to be gathered. The next slide, please. Now, there's lots of information on this slide, and I'll emphasize that which is important in this group. Now, risks of seizures after EBD in MMR. These data show that following the injection of DBT, the same day following the injection of DBT, there was 3 times the expected rate of seizures. On 4 to 7 days after the injection of MMR, there was almost 2 times the expected rate of seizures. And here, at 14 days later, there was more than 3 times the expected rate of seizures occurring in this group. Next slide, please. What are the conclusions? Going into this black box, after the first treatment, seizures are associated with several vaccines. That's the important information in this slide. Seizures are associated with several vaccines. Because of this, there's an interest to minimize infections and simplify vaccination schedules. And the representative of the public health service here yesterday said they are reducing the number of visits with these. We're going to minimize infections and simplify vaccination schedules. And we're going to think about synergistic effects by combining energy. The next slide.
This is 50 years. They're working on this approved
adverse reaction. 50 years after widespread use of vaccines is undertaken. Now let's talk about thrombocytopenia associated with measles and vaccines. Now, thrombocytopenia is really a bleeding mechanism by interfering with the function of platelets. And this study was carried out by this doctor as part of the new method of adverse reaction. The next slide, please. The dad in the physician's desk reference, the most recent issue, the adverse clinical reactions associated with the use of PMR2 may include malaise, sore throat, thrombocytopenia, etc. The next slide, please. Now, what was observed in this study? The normal platelet count for children's stage group is in this range. Following measles, you get signs of fatigue, bruising, fatigue, malaise, joint pain, bleeding guns, etc. By the way, put the slide together. I left that at the end of the body. That's important. But anyway, this is the sort of thing that results that follows the injection of the measles vaccine. The next slide, please.
Therefore, we will exclude children from compensation
Because of monetary reasons, not because of medical reasons, but there's a positive cause and effect in vaccination at the onset of adverse events. And I bring this to your attention that this is strictly served in even those who were advocates of vaccination. That this justice that was given to cases that occurred prior to this notice will now be, that same justice will be denied to new cases where the medical events are the same. And by the way, it's interesting, I can't see all of those, but these are the conditions under which a child presents itself, but these conditions within this specified time, the child is given the benefit of the doubt. In other words, there would be no argument as to whether that was caused or not caused. If a child develops these signs and symptoms of anaphylaxis, brain damage, encephalitis, arthritis, and so forth, the benefit of the doubt is given to the child. Now, this gives you some idea of the kind of money that's been given to children who are injured. The average reward is $27,000. The average reward from SNEA is about $1 million, and so forth. It becomes very expensive, about $532 million here, involved in 2,500 cases here. So it's becoming expensive, far more expensive than the advocates of this program have projected. Yet the Congress was told that if this compensation bill goes into effect, that you will have another swine flu episode, where the expense will be so great, depending on the medical expenses of those who are injured by vaccines, that it cannot be sustained. But anyway, that is the system that I'm in the next slide. I hope this slide can tell you that the President's wife said at some time in the past, more than 20 years ago, a young, single, and inexperienced Hillary Rodham wrote that parents should not be permitted by law to unilaterally decide how to raise their children. Instead, those she called children's allies should be given the legal authority to tinker with the internal decisions of the parents. That gives you some idea of the political landscape in which these endeavors are undertaken. Thank you.
Once again, provided we can get to these children quickly enough, the onset of these illnesses, and give vitamin C in adequate amounts in the proper way, introduction intravenously and so forth, and a few other odds and ends as well. Then thrombocytopenia and all the other problems just disappear. They don't exist in almost every case. The famous Dr. Klenner, the late Dr. Klenner in America, taught me a great lesson. He said there is no such word in medicine as always, and there is no such word in medicine as never. So I'm not prepared to say that always we can save a child. But I can say quite definitely that so far I have always been able to save them. So that these doctors that say, oh, we get these deaths from measles, and we get these deaths from this disease and that disease. Well, my answer to that is, you shouldn't be getting these deaths. It's unnecessary. And the vaccine is not the answer. The vaccine is improper treatment. And the reversal of these conditions is so quick, it's absolutely dramatic if it is carried out properly. Now, I've demonstrated this to many doctors. They've seen me do it. They've seen unconscious children become conscious in a matter of half an hour, or perhaps, say, a couple of hours. And they have walked away shaking their heads in disbelief, and they don't believe what they've just seen. So that these reactions, as far as I'm concerned, are unnecessary to these infectious diseases. We have methods of dealing with them and treating them. The only time these treatments don't work is where the immunological system of the child is absolutely rock bottom, where a child's nutritional status is absolutely rock bottom, and nothing on earth will save it.
The tuberculosis scratch test, and I was wondering if you have any data or information on the toxicity levels and the danger levels of
No, I really don't. What I tried to do is to present to you facts, real factual information. It's not what I believe or what anyone else believes. This is the information that was presented to a commission recently. And this commission is to recommend to the Secretary of Health and Human Services the message that she should take back to Congress. So what I've given to you is not what I believe or anything. It's what occurred. And it's important in this respect. If a pediatrician tells you that there's no information that the injection of vaccines does not induce seizures in some children, he is telling you what he believes. But the real world is different. Vaccines do induce seizures in children, in some children. And to tell you otherwise means that he doesn't know that this occurs, or he's telling you something that just isn't so. And this applies not only to seizures. Thrombocytopenia occurs. Before, no one thought that this resulted from injection of vaccines. We now know that thrombocytopenia, which is a bleeding disease, you have petechiae internally, externally, it's serious, can result in hospitalization, is induced by these vaccines. Now, see, that is one of them. Now, by the way, the information presented here, when I call the person who did the work, who controls this large database link, he was very outgoing. He gave me questions, he gave me answers to every question I put. But I had another question I wanted to ask. I called back the second time, and he was no longer available. And he hasn't been available since that time. So we've shut him up. And he told me, when he gave this presentation, I said, it appears that this audience doubts the validity of your work. He said, they might doubt, but I don't doubt it. And that's very important. Now this guy's been shut up for the time being. So that's the real world for you. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. I have one final question for you. We read in A Shock in the Dark, the book A Shock in the Dark, where a family refused to have their children vaccinated, and we understand that in the United States it's compulsory. These children were actually confiscated forthwith from their parents. Could you tell me if this is still happening?
Yeah. Well, it's not confiscation, but now, for instance, if a single mother has a child, and she's on welfare, and if she refuses to have the child immunized, she loses her rights for welfare. So if that's the real world, that's the factual real world. In other words, she has no choice. Now, she can't go out and get a job, because if she gets a job, she has to pay for child care during the day. She has to pay for transportation costs to get to the job. She has to dress differently. In other words, she will spend more in transportation costs, child care costs, and she can never earn. Therefore, she stays, and this is a trap in which these people find themselves. It's a trap. And that's for the one end of life, for the child, infant. And the other end of life, those people in nursing homes, they have no choice. If they don't want to be vaccinated against influenza, they must be, because the doctor has a captive audience. And if they refuse, he threatens the fact, well, you can no longer be part of this nursing home. You're endangering the others. He doesn't tell her that the real information shows that influenza virus vaccine does not protect the elderly against influenza. It never has, and it, as long as that vaccine is put together as it is, it will never protect against influenza. So with that enlightening remark, I'll close.
Thank you very much.